2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
On today's episode, Dr. Lee Balcom joins us, and we have a great discussion about intentionality and actively creating a stronger marriage connection, both physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Dr. Lee Balcom is internationally known for his methods and approaches to saving marriages. For three decades, Lee has been helping people around the world save, restore, and create the marriage they deserve and desire. He's the author of the book, How to Save Your Marriage in Three Simple Steps, in addition to six other books, and he's the creator of the highly effective internet marriage program, Save the Marriage. Lee is also the host of two popular podcasts, Thrive Nation and Save the Marriage. You can find out more about Dr. Balcom and his resources at SaveTheMarriage.com. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to Stronger Marriage Connection. I'm psychologist Dr. Liz Hale, along with the esteemed professor Dr. Dave Schramm, and we are dedicating our life's work to bringing you the best we have in valid marital research, along with a few tips and tools to help you create the marriage of your dreams. Dave, you know, those go-to colleagues in your life that you can always rely on to tell you kind of the straight scoop of what's going on currently with marriage today.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They're so important.
Well, you're one of those people for me, too. But another one of those key resources is Dr. Lee Balcom. I am really honored that he is joining us today. I feel a little starstruck, you know. Welcome to Stronger Marriage Connection, Dr. Balcom.
Thank you for having me. I don't know about the starstruck, but I'm sure happy to be here.
Well, I have followed your writings for years based on our similar philosophies in helping couples. It's such a pleasure to have you here and to introduce you to Dave. You two are like Southern gentlemen. I don't think Dave's from the South, but I believe you are, Lee. And you remind me you have similar dispositions, and I think highly of you both. Let's just get right down to it. You have seen a tremendous amount in your 30 years of marriage therapy, pre-marriage therapy, and relationship coaching. So let's start at the beginning of a relationship, if you don't mind. When couples first get together, what is a number one concern, Lee, you have for them? And what's your best advice for them right out of the gate?
Yes. My number one concern is they've convinced themselves that their love is going to do it. And that's the irony of it, right? Because that's why people want to get married, because they've fallen in love. And you talked about the premarital work. And where I lived right before where we live now for 25 years, if you got married in six or seven different churches or religious places, you had to come through my office. And so I saw all these people. And one of the things that to the person, they were convinced that they were going to beat the odds. Before we hit record, you know, we were talking about those odds. They're somewhere in the neighborhood of 50-50. And they always thought that they had beat the odds because their love was the real love, you know, and all the people that didn't make it had the wrong love. And so right out of the gate, my concern is that they have overestimated the power of their love to carry them through to the finish line. And so that's the big one.
Yes. And so therefore, your advice for them is to kind of get real and to get educated.
Well, to be aware that their love is not going to get them there. And that's okay. It's just that love changes over time, and people think that the love they're experiencing then is what they're going to feel forever. Even if they saw their parents, you know, at that stage where they weren't so in love, they think they figured it out. And so, one of the things that I tried to instill, knowing that they were love struck, at that point, was that they were going to hit problems. And when they did, not if they did, but when they did, to seek help, seek advice, get something early on, because it's a whole lot easier to deal with things, you know, before they're festered and have really gotten to the point where they are so disconnected that they can't find their way back. To find help early is kind of what I left them with. My hope was that they liked me enough that they'd come back to me as soon as they had a problem and not wait it out.
Yeah.
Love is good, but love alone is not enough. All right. Excellent. And seek help. Thank you.
Oh, man, I love that. Lee, I've done some research of my own a couple decades ago, actually, 1,000 newlyweds. And I want to just, you know, that first year of marriage. And I found that, you know what, there's a lot of people who have some struggles right there early on in those early stages of relationship. What are couples doing in that first year or two that's getting them into trouble?
Yeah. So one of the shifts I think that we have to make in order to have a successful marriage is to go from you and me to we. If we don't do that, if you don't get that mindset that we're a team, we're the new unit, we're the new family, we're the new entity, however, you know, but we're on the same team. We're in this together to win. If we don't make that shift, you and me is, I mean, that's, a lot of people think, well, that's good enough. We're you and me, the partnership. But if they don't make that psychological shift to seeing themselves as a unit, as a team, eventually that becomes you versus me. And they start struggling against each other in the midst of that. So that first year it's going to be a struggle for any couple, whether they acknowledge it or not. You know, a lot of times they're hoping the momentum carries them through. And so sometimes they pretend like it's not a struggle, but they're negotiating new roles, new responsibilities, new identities, how to even navigate this entity that they've become. And it doesn't really matter if they've lived together. You know, a lot of times they think that they've lived together, so they've got that figured out. And, you know, you probably know the statistics. The people who live together first have a lower success rate because they think they've already figured it out. I think that's the big reason is they think they've already figured it out. And then there comes this thing, the shift that has to happen. And they're struggling against that, thinking they've already done that shift. And so I don't think that happens until you're at that level of commitment where you're basically, you said, no matter what, I mean, whatever the day brings, we're in this together. That's the time when you can make that shift. And the first year it's tough. I sometimes talk, scuba diver person that I am. Do you know the most dangerous part of a dive, the most dangerous depth of a dive?
No.
It's the first part. The first 25 feet are the most dangerous.
Oh. No kidding.
Just by physics. You've got to get through that first 25 feet because after that, the pressure changes on how quickly it accelerates on your body. So it's the same thing with, you know, you jump into the water in that first year. It's the most treacherous to get through. And so a lot of people think, well, it's later on. But that first bit, you've got to acclimate to. You've got to allow things to get used to the changes that have happened. And so the first year and really the first few years. And if we really want to continue on kind of the trajectory of a lot of couples where the first few years and then there's a child, you know, then it happens again. You've got that that chance to rethink it all over again when you go from two to three and the entity is now enlarged again. So I think that's the reason for those struggles during that early part.
Just when we think we figured it out, right?
I've been married for 35 years. We just celebrated that last month. And I still go, oh, we're not quite where I want to be with or we want to be with that in this area. You know, and so wherever you go in life, you know, as you go on along, things change. And the places that suddenly you have to rethink, what does it mean to be this team? How do you do that? It changes. So it's not the first year. It's not the first 7 years. So, you know, you're the 7 year itch. It's not, you know, it continues on. You get to the place where those transitions keep happening. And we've got to figure out how, as we change through life, how those changes then redefine what we think of as being in a we.
Mm-hmm. So then, Lee, the pause button marriage, that comes down a little bit later then? Talk to me about the pause button.
Well, it can
marriage.
Happen anytime. But usually, so pause button marriage is my term for how we get ourselves into trouble as a couple, because we hit the pause and we don't really think actively about it for the most part. But, you know, I hear people when they've come to my office, and it can happen with a child. It can happen with a job or thinking you have to be at a certain level of professional accomplishment, or, you know, education can do that, or hobbies. I know people that they're like, you know, we'll come back to our marriage and we'll reengage. But let's just take the child thing, because that's so common. We're like, you know, now we've got to focus on this child. And once that child goes to, once that child gets potty trained, then once that child's in kindergarten, and then once that child is in high school, and then once that child is in college, and, you know, it keeps on going, we'll get back to us. And the problem is that whenever we hit the pause button for whatever reason, we pause the relationship, but the individuals keep kind of growing and changing and moving forward. And so the relationship can no longer contain that, because they haven't bridged that gap. So that's a piece of it. The other piece is you can't pause any relationship. You know, I've got friends that I haven't communicated with for years, and I would say, oh, we're friends. But if I were to try to reconnect with them, it'd be like strangers. So, you know, how's the last decade been for you? You know, how do you catch up on that? And so we've lost connection so much that you end up feeling like you're strangers, sometimes back to that feeling like you're enemies, even, because you kind of feel like you're in opposition, but certainly feeling disconnection. And disconnection is the heart of what keeps any, I think about it as the kind of the circulation system in our marriage is connection. And so as long as that connection is flowing, we're good. But just like, you know, if you squeeze your wrist too long, your hand goes numb because you've cut off the blood supply. The same thing happens when you cut off connection. Eventually you numb down the relationship, and do that long enough, and you pretty much, you know, put that relationship permanently to sleep if you're not careful.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good warning. It's so true. You know, oftentimes, Dave and Lee, well, couples will present themselves in marriage therapy with one chief complaint or request, and that is, we need to learn how to better communicate. What's your response to that, Lee? Your laughter tells us something.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, there are a couple of problems with that. One is, I think that sometimes that's a default mechanism for therapists too, because it's easy to work on communication stuff. You can teach them different messaging and things like that. The problem is, and I remember how distinct it was when I first was, you know, couple after couple, we just need to communicate better. And I was sitting there going, I understand everything you're telling me. And so I remember one day I was sitting there, and this couple came in. We just, you know, we don't communicate well. We need you to teach us communication skills. I said, okay, tell me more about that. And so they both talked for about 20 minutes, very smart people. And I said, you know, these past 20 minutes, is there a word or anything that you two haven't understood in what you said to each other? And they said, no. And I said, I've understood. I think I've understood you perfectly, which tells me there's not a communication problem. You have communication skills. It's what you're communicating that's the problem. And so my analogy has ended up being that communication is kind of like the plumbing in a house. You know, if plumbing does two things, it brings good stuff in and puts bad stuff out. If you cross those up, you've got a real problem. And so if I teach communication skills to a couple and the connection isn't there, all I'm doing is teaching them to argue better, more effectively, to fight better, not necessarily to get anywhere. You know, the famous I statements that we often associate it with therapy. If there's not connection behind that, people go from hearing, you know, what you're trying to change is someone saying, you know, you're so stupid, you do this, to saying, I feel hurt when you do this. And they do that a few times without connection. And the person then translates that as, I'm so stupid when I do this. You know, it just gets right back to that broken, hurt connection that was communicated in different ways. So fixing communication without addressing the connection just makes them more effective at the battles.
Man, Lee, we couldn't agree more here at Stronger Marriage Connection. And I'm so glad that you're preaching the same sermon there with that connection first, because you can communicate all you want, but unless you have that connection, then that direction or correction is not going to be helpful. So what are three ways? What would you say are three ways we can better connect, and how do marriages move through what we call the arc of disconnection?
So let's talk about the arc of disconnection first, because so you think of that arc, right? And if you can imagine, the starting point is there is no connection. Two people, they bump into each other, there's some interest, and they start building connection. And as they go, at some point, they get to that point where they identify that they're in this relationship, you and me. And as they get to that point, they at some point decide that you and me, we want to make that permanent. So there's the connection that and the abundance of connection. When people talk about feeling in love, there's just an overabundance of connection. They feel so connected and they want to meet each other's needs and get more of each other. And so that's that arc of where you fall in love over here. And you get to this place where you're saying, I do. And you either have to negotiate the roles and the rules and the expectations and continue that journey. It's not going to arc quite the same, but it continues up. Or you start down and the end point is disdain. You can still be in that relationship and go from disconnection happens somewhere midpoint over on the side. But if you keep dropping down, disdain is the end result, where it's like, I can't even stand to be near you anymore. And so that arc is just because they never negotiated the pieces and never brought in intentionality on where they wanted to go and what we wanted to renegotiate these pieces. So connection, that's obviously, we've been talking about this arc of connection, the connection pieces. When I start talking about connection with people, they're like, what is connection? Well, it happens on three different levels. And so there's physical connection, which I always use the prefix of loving, right? Any loving contact. So hold a hand, give a hug, have sex, whatever that loving physical touch is, that's the physical connection. And that's pretty nonverbal. You know, I don't have to say anything. That loving physical touch conveys connection. And so, you know, my two dogs love on each other. They lay all over each other, and they're physically connected. Animals do that, but humans do that from infancy on. And so we connect in that close way. Emotional is when you feel like somebody's on your side. They're on your team. They get you. They understand you, and vice versa. So I feel emotionally connected when I've had a tough day and my wife can say, oh, I'm so sorry, I understand. Or the same if I'm connecting with her that way. And the thing is, emotional is two way, right? If I'm saying, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm connecting and she's getting connection. It's those go hand in hand. The one that a lot of people miss is the spiritual connection. And this isn't about religion. It can include that, but it's more of a deep level of you get the person knowing what's important to them. When I talked with people, and Dave, I don't know how many of it came up when you were talking with those, whatever, 1,000 people in that year, but, you know, they fall in love often over a long, in-depth conversation about where they've been and where they're going. I remember it with my wife. We talked, well, at that time, becoming girlfriend. And, you know, we talked until wee hours of the morning, comparing our backgrounds, our values, what we learned from our family growing up, what we wanted out of life, where we wanted to go. That's deeper than just, I get you, right? That's sharing these hopes and dreams and fears and all of that. And what's important to us, our core values. And because a lot of people just kind of drop that into the emotional basket, they forget to keep doing that. My life dreams and hopes have changed over the years. My wife's has too. If we don't talk about it, we don't know what that path looks like. And so those are the three areas that are the kind of the core pieces. And many times when I'm talking with couples, one of them has been cut off. one of those three, and sometimes two of those three. And if they're really in a bad place, all three are, you know, have been cut off. And so intentionality about restoring those and knowing what they are helps. If you can say, oh, I haven't been doing that. I haven't been saying, hey, how's your day? Or I haven't been giving the loving hugs and touches and pats. Haven't been talking about what's important in life. You can begin to see where you're missing that connection flow and begin to reengage it. The nice thing is we humans are so desperate for deep connection that when it comes back on, we're often ready to, you know, grab the hose and get all the water we can out of that. And so it's sometimes easier to reconnect than people think it is because we're so wired for that connection.
I love that.
I like those three areas. So physical, emotional, and spiritual. And it is true. I probably hear a lot, especially in that spiritual one where he just doesn't get me, right? I want her to get me.
We'll be right back after this brief message.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
And we're back. Well, let's dive right in.
That is a really chief complaint. Next to communication, and then next to, I think you and I, Lee, might see similar clients. I see people really kind of at a T in the road, right? Where it goes left or right. We need to make a choice. And oftentimes I will be hearing one of them say to their partner, you know, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. How often do we hear that as marriage professionals? Yeah, all right. The time.
That's usually the conversation that starts the we're in crisis conversation.
We're in trouble. That's right. How do you offer clarity to a partner caught in this false belief of loving but not being in love with their partner?
Well, and so that's there are a couple of things that I think have happened in that. Often, and you've probably seen this too, that often they have bought into a myth of how it's supposed to be. And so their expectation of how this should feel is already elevated. So that's one possibility. Often there is an interest somewhere else that's made them feel the butterflies again, made them feel alive again, that they haven't felt in a long time for that relationship. And so that has sowed this false sense that that's the right path and the marriage is the wrong path. And many times I've had that conversation where somebody has become involved with someone else and they're like, you know, they're nothing like my spouse. And I'll say they're nothing like where you and your spouse are in your relationship, but tell me, compare it to your early days. And they often get a really cringy look on their face and go, oh my gosh, it's where we were too. And so they have this false sense from somewhere else that that is true. The other one though, is that feeling of passion that can kind of ebb and flow in any mature relationship. So I'm not saying that a mature relationship is without the feelings of romance and passion and all that. It's just that if you expect it to always be cresting rather than being more tidal, right, in and out, up and down, then you get fooled when it's not there. And so the question is, can we do things to reconnect? Because that in love feeling is, I think, just a side effect of the overabundance of connection. When we're so connected and feel like we get each other so deeply, that's when the passion kicks back in. And so if we think of it tidally, like there are times when I'm going to feel it and times when I'm not, high tide, low tide, then that kind of helps normalize it for some. But there are some people that just want to feel that all the time and cannot be convinced that that is a myth of reality, that that's going to be there all the time. And those are often the ones that's because there's a siren somewhere else calling them. And whether that's a movie or just, you know, mythology, or whether that's somebody else, or both.
And what are the chances of that relationship working out, Lee? What do you say to couples, the third party, that is? It's based on fantasy, right? I love your FALTS acronym that you write about.
Yeah.
What are the chances of that relationship really going into the ages? Very slim, I hear.
Very slim. And one of the reasons is because if somebody is involved in an affair, almost always it's hidden. And it's by deceit and it's in dishonesty. And so you start going, wow, this person cheated with me. They could cheat again on me. And so already the kind of the deceit is built into it. And that's after the kind of the cloud of passion begins to fade a little bit and you start having a little more realistic view. And part of what I think is we miss is how artificial those relationships become. I mean, you know, I see my wife and she sees me at our best, at our worst. When, you know, I come in from, we just got back from vacation. I come in from paddling and my hair is everywhere and I'm drenched in sweat and I'm exhausted. And then you compare that to the people who are sneaking off to see somebody at a nice restaurant or at a hotel or, you know, in their, we're doing their best to impress this other person. And so their comparison is fantasy life and real life. And as fantasy life becomes more real life, if they try to make that permanent, then just the fantasy begins to collapse on itself just because reality is what it is. It comes knocking one day or another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And darn, sometimes it's just too late for that, you know, initial couple, which is heartbreaking.
It is. Sometimes the damage is just too far. I think a lot of the research shows that people who do get through an affair, the marriage is actually stronger as they look back and it's like the naivete is gone. Now they can't take it for granted. They actually have to say, what are we going to do to work through this? And there's a lot of honesty that comes back into the relationship that may never have been there, but they have to get past that betrayal to get there.
Wow, man.
Can be a real win if they do. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. If they do. Now, Lee, you refer to a marriage fail point, right? The spot where a marriage is most likely to fail and where a couple must, they've got to choose a path. And these fail points, they only have a limited number of causes. So how can identifying and understanding them save our marriage?
Yeah. I often talk about the difference between a marriage fail point and an individual's fail point. You know, there comes a time when somebody may say, I am not willing to work on this, or I'm not going to pursue this anymore. So that's an individual fail point. I've done some trainings on that. But the marriage fail point is that point when, you know, it's I always use the when I was a kid, I don't know how many wire hangers I went through that my mom, you know, kept. Where's the wire hanger I had? Because I twisted them into stuff and I. You know, my dad had his pliers and he had them in his special place since I knew not to bother them because he would be saying, who's got my pliers? And so I would take them and I would just bend them back and forth. And after a while, they start bending easier and easier and easier. And then they just snap. And that's the fail point of metal, right? Of that hanger. And it's the same in relationships. You know, as it's been flexed over and over, there comes a point when attempt after attempt at change, continuing to disconnect and try to reconnect, eventually you just go, it's just broken. And so part of what many couples determine is they've just gone through so many that they're very close to that. That wire is hot and it's gotten the fracture points in it. And the question is, are they going to be able to get beyond that, work on the connection, really make some genuine changes, you know? The therapy world always talks about those first order versus second order changes. And a lot of times couples do the first order change. You know, they'll go, oh, we're not connected, so let's do date night. And then you see him at date night and they're both, on their phone or doing something else or talking about the kids, you know, doing anything but talking about themselves and their connection. And so that's kind of the first order change. We're doing something that we should be doing, but they're not really doing anything. The second order, that deeper, real, genuine change, that really restructures the relationship. And so you do that enough times and finally you go, I give up. Yeah, it's failed. So, the fail point can come in lots of different ways, but that it's somewhere in there. Just
Wow, man, that's tough. Lee, you have a husband's boot camp, right? What recommendations do you have, to share with husbands to immediately support them in improving their marriages?
Yeah, you know, so I've had several conversations with people like, why isn't there a wife boot camp? And I'm like, there should be. But a man doing a wife boot camp is a good way to get booted.
Yeah, that's
true. I try to speak, to where I know. And I know a lot of men who also feel like they never got much of an education in relationships. Their dad was absent. If their parents survived and you know, my age group, we kind of came in just as divorce was really getting higher rates. And so there are a lot of people who were doing the no-fault divorce when I was a kid. I remember my friends divorcing. And so a lot of them came from not having a father at home to help them. And so I think there's some missing skills. And then I just think there are some skills that are basic tools that most people, period, not just men, but most people don't have. And so that boot camp is designed. It's a video boot camp, structured over 30 days. So, you know, what do you do to get into shape? And so it ramps up over time. We get to the point where we're even talking about what are the wounds that men, typically men, carry around with them that get in the way of relationship. And so the idea is to be able to watch a video, get a better understanding of, for instance, what is empathy? How can I show empathy? What is connection? How do I show connection on three different levels? What are better ways of having arguments? And one of the things I noticed it's not true for all men, but a lot of men feel like if you argue, there's something wrong with a relationship. And my thing is, if you don't have conflict, there's no level of conflict with two people that intimately together, you've got another problem. You're not making progress. And so the question is, how do we make progress? How can conflict serve to move us forward as a couple? So I don't have to be scared of it. And we can figure out how to move forward. And then there's the repair stuff, like how can I forgive and how can I apologize and take responsibility? And so there are lots of these pieces that I think just most people, but certainly lots of men have missed out on having those pieces. So we're just kind of putting those in place and getting people into getting men into the best shape we can as husbands, as fathers, as human beings.
Ooh, yeah.
I should start that wives boot camp.
Yeah. Yeah, right, Liz.
You know, cause very similarly, some of us, I mean, I always thought that I kind of knew what respect was until I really did a deeper dive more recently. Mm-hmm. In a coaching program myself, it's like, oh gosh, I haven't been very respectful at all. We have those blind spots.
Yep.
So, I love that you have a husband boot camp. I think those men are lucky.
It's been fun.
Leslie, yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
Leslie, Lee, what tips do you have for each of us to ensure that we show up the way we want to? I know I want to show up, and yet it doesn't always happen. It gets sidelined somehow.
Yeah. A lot of what we've talked about, there's intentionality behind everything, right? And so I think if we're just waiting for things to happen, I'm waiting to connect with my spouse. When's that going to happen? I'm waiting by default. Waiting just leads us in this limbo place. And that's true with how we show up. So, the Woody Allen quote, 80% of life is just showing up. And I think what people miss in his quote is that he was saying, like, if I want to be good at a violin, I got to show up at violin practice and do it. You know, I mean, it's not just here I am. And so part of that is, how do we want to truly show up in life, just to get away from Woody Allen stuff? How do we want to just show up in life and be our true self? And so we got to know what our true self is. And there's some flexibility in there. So I also think we ought to decide what we want our true selves to be like as we move forward. You know, we have some elasticity. We have this plasticity of our brain that we can change lots of how we present ourselves. So how I'm coming across, if I'm coming across as angry or resentful, or am I coming across as critical, or am I coming across as somebody that is connecting and loving and supportive? And I can make those choices as long as I'm intentional. I created a journal that people can use to kind of think in the morning. How do I want to show up today? You know, what are the specifics? And then to come back in the evening and go, that's my dog. Sorry. He's just decided to come in my office beside me. But at the end of the day to go, how did I do? Did I actually show up the way I wanted to? And if not, how can I be more intentional the next day? And I think that any of us can do that. Forget having the journal. You can get up and say, who do I want to be today? How does that look specifically? How would I express being warm and supportive and loving to my spouse, to my friends, to family, and then to reflect on it. Did I follow through on that? Did I really make it?
You know, there's such an often common complaint in marriage therapy when I talk about change and how we're changing as we're sitting here, right? Cellular change and whatnot, because people often say, you know what, that's just who I am. I can't change. You just got to accept me for who I am. A bit of a cop-out, Lee. Do you think?
All therapists have these vignettes in our head that you're sitting there going, oh my gosh. So I had a couple that I'd been working with trying to get this guy to just be a little more open with his wife and talk with her more and share. And he was doing the same thing. You know, I can't change. I'm this old. I can't change. And so they called me and said, hey, we need to postpone our next meeting because this guy was going to a sales meeting. And so he came back and I said, hey, how's the sales meeting? He said, oh, great. I said, did you learn anything new? He said, yeah. And I said, what did it change for you about how you're going to do the sales thing? He said, oh, I learned this whole new thing. And he outlined how he was going to be different, what he was going to say was different and all that. And I said, huh, interesting. You can see that in your sales process, but you can't see how you might be able to do that at home.
Oh,
and you see this wife's grin just go, and you're sitting there going, oh, I've been caught. And so, you know, the growth mindset that Carol Dweck talks about, we all can step into the growth mindset, but we've got to be willing to say, who I am is not finished. Mm-hmm. I can be something better. I can be someone better. Just have to be intentional about that.
Oh, I love that idea of that intentionality, Lee. And before we wrap up and let you go, we'd like to ask all of our guests what they feel like is the key component of a stronger marriage connection. What is that?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've already hinted at some of this, right? Intentional connection in the busyness of life, it's easy to hit the pause button and not realize it because you've got all these other things calling out to you. And we sometimes forget that we're showing our priorities and not in what we say. If you ask couples, what's the most important relationship in your life? Oh, my marriage. Yeah, and so they'll name that, but their priority, how they live it out. I often talk about our value stack. We have this stack that determines what we'll choose. So our value stack, if I say my marriage is most important, but if you say, hey, you know, y'all want to do something on Saturday and my wife has already asked me to do something, I'm like, which is more important? Whatever I choose is going to say something clear. And so part of that intentionality is not necessarily that I have to spend every day with my wife. It's not that my spouse has to be the number one consumer of my time and the relationship being the number one consumer. But if I haven't decided intentionally about how that fits in, how do we maintain our connection? You know, what do we do to maintain that intentionally? It's going to end up getting shuffled. You know, those emergencies pop up. And so it's not whether we cover the emergencies, it's whether we allow the everyday to flood out, you know, the more important stuff, because we just shuffle it to the back and say, you know, we'll get back to that later on. So intentional connection, is the only way that couples ever are going to stay connected. If we think it's just going to happen at the end of the day, when you're flopped out on the couch, watching something else streaming, but you're exhausted from the day. Are you together? Sure. Are you showing up for each other? Probably not. Is it furthering your connection? Maybe a little. But is there some other way of doing that with more intention?
Love that. That's great.
I have for so long appreciated your free trainings, Dr. Bachman, and I no longer want to keep you this well-kept secret. I want to be able to share with our listeners where they can find you. And I've used your name quite a bit, so I say that tongue-in-cheek. I always give you credit when I present something that is from you. But where can our listeners and friends find you, your keen resources, especially how even just one partner can save a marriage? And that is an excellent program you have online.
So Save the Marriage. Yeah, SaveTheMarriage.com is that program. But a good way to learn more about that is go to SaveTheMarriage.com/podcast, which puts you on my podcast. And that's a good way of getting a lot of information, a little knowledge about me. I have some books out, SaveTheMarriage.com/books. So, you know, tricky little URL there. So SaveTheMarriage.com/books will get you on to the Amazon page with my books. You don't have to get it from Amazon if you don't like Amazon, but it gives you the information to order from there. And so those are great ways of connecting and finding out more.
You're generous with your resources. We appreciate that so much.
Yeah, we'll be sure to put those links directly in our show notes. So listeners, you can check those out there to find more information about Lee and his books and resources. Hey, as we wrap up, we'd like to ask all of our guests, just what the takeaway of the day with all the things that we've been talking about. I have a feeling, right, what's coming, Lee, but I want our listeners to hear it one more time. What's your takeaway from our discussion?
If people can remember that pause button and ask the question, did we hit pause and what does it take to unpause it? How can we get intentional about connecting? Those three areas are great linchpins. And by the way, if only one person is working, you can still work on building those connections from a physical level, an emotional level, and a spiritual level, and never have to say to your spouse, hey, I just want to let you know I'm working on this connection thing. It's possible to unpause it and take action. And so the bigger takeaway is intentional action around connection. The key to getting back on track, whether it's one person working on it or both people.
Man, so great. I love it. Love it. Love it. Liz, what's your takeaway of the day?
You know, I'm thinking a lot about the key of the we, right? The we is so key. One day my husband said to me, we were having a tussle about something, a gridlock. I can't remember what it was, but he goes, look, Liz, wait a minute. I'm on your side. Right. And it just stopped me in my tracks. It was like a wake-up call. It's like, oh, yeah, you certainly are. And it got me back to kind of that center position. So I think the team, and having each other's backs, it's back to the spiritual piece of those three parts. We all really want someone to get us, to really know us. And Dave, what's your greatest takeaway from our interview with Lee today?
Yeah, I love this because, man, our views just really align, Lee, when you're talking about connection, the importance of that. I like to tell our listeners, lack of attention leads to loss of connection. But I haven't thought about those three areas of physical, the emotional, the spiritual, and what am I doing in each of those areas, and what can one person do, and not expecting them to do something in return, but I'm going to do, I love this person and that's why I'm doing it, not with any kind of a selfish motives. So, man, I love it. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us today, Lee.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that's it all now, our friends. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Stronger Marriage Connection. And Liz, take us home.
Well, remember, it's the small and simple changes that create a stronger marriage connection. Take care now.
Thanks for joining us today. Hey, do us a favor and take a few minutes to subscribe to our podcast and the Utah Marriage Commission YouTube channel, where you can watch this and every episode of the show. When you hit the like button and leave a comment, your feedback helps us improve the show. And don't forget to share this episode with a friend. You can also follow and connect with us on Instagram at Stronger Marriage Life and on Facebook at Stronger Marriage. Be sure to share with us what topics you want us to explore or what you loved about today's episode. If you want even more resources to improve your relationship connection, visit our website at strongermarriage.org. where you'll find free workshops, webinars, relationship surveys, and more. Each episode of Stronger Marriage Connection is hosted and sponsored by the Utah Marriage Commission at Utah State University. And finally, a big thanks to our producers Rex Polanis and Alexis Alcott
and the team at Utah State University. And you, our audience, you make this show possible.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.